This is Wealth Wake Up with Dick Donahue and Camille Koppenberg. KGMI and the Cascade Radio Group receive financial compensation to present this program in its entirety.
The opinions voiced on Wealth Wake Up with Dick Donahue and Camille Koppenberg are for general information only and not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual. To determine what is appropriate for you, consult a qualified professional. Investment advisory services offered through CWM LLC, a registered investment advisor. Carson Partners is a division of CWM LLC, a nationwide partnership of advisors. Guests on Wealth Wake Up with Dick Donahue and Camille Koppenberg are not affiliated with CWM LLC.
Good Saturday morning. Welcome to Wealth Wake Up Live. Dick Donahue with you in studio. Camille is off today. Not off because he's having the baby yet, but off today. Anyway, let's talk about this weekly recap. The buy-the-dip strategy, supported by strong earnings reports, drove the Dow Jones Industrial Average, the S&P 500 Index, and the NASDAQ to close at record highs. The record highs were notable after last week's sell-off, followed by Monday's steep declines. Growth provided the leadership as the NASDAQ gained 2.84%, followed by the Russell 2000 Index up 2.15%, the S&P 500 up 1.96%, and the Dow Jones Industrial Average was up 1.08%. The Russell 2000 has recently lagged the other major indices as analysts debate the strength of the economic recovery and the current cycle's remaining upside. Leading technology stocks, Twitter, social media area, Snap, digital photography, reported strong revenue and earnings. Retailers Lands' End and Crocs gained as individuals celebrated the economic reopening of updating their clothing and lifestyle wear. Lithium Motors reported strong sales increases in new and used autos. United Airlines reported its first positive post-pandemic earnings as domestic leisure travel neared pre-pandemic levels. Also, companies such as Honeywell, which is in the industrial sector, Domino's Pizza, and HCA Healthcare reported improving revenue and earnings growth as customers increased spending on housing, travel, elective medical procedures, and other goods and services. Senate negotiations continue on the bipartisan infrastructure bill. A version for consideration may emerge next week, although its outlook remains uncertain given the unresolved issues and the Senate's upcoming August adjournment. Similarly, the fate of the $3.5 billion social infrastructure bill is unclear, as the bill, likely structured as a reconciliation item, would require virtually unanimous Democratic approval. The highly transmissible Delta variant of COVID-19 continues to gain steam as cases surge in all 50 states. Most policymakers stress the priority of improving vaccination rates rather than another round of closures or lockdowns. Inflation in particular, the idea that the elevated inflation may continue beyond the Federal Reserve's projections remains a concern. Looking ahead, investors will weigh the generally optimistic outlooks emerging from earnings reports across against the pandemic and inflationary risks while Congress is on the brake. The upside bias, perhaps with increased volatility, still remains. Looking at some of our recovery tracker information for the week, we saw that initial jobless claims increased. However, continuing claims decreased this week. Among other things, box office receipts were up almost 43.4% in the last couple of weeks. Rail traffic for rail cars was down about 2.5%. Steel production was up slightly at 0.4% increase. Hotel occupancy increased about 3%. Operational state of the restaurant industries were up about 2%. TSA checkpoint data actually hit an average of 2,072,555 passengers a day. And while that's still about 21% below where it was back in 2019, that was also a 2.3% increase. And we saw a supply of motor gasoline in the U.S. Increase slightly, and the global commercial flights were up to 95,051 a day. That's still about 24.2% below its peak, but that was also a 1.3% increase in the number of flights. You know, I like to spend some time looking at all different things. Like, you know, today I want to talk about volatility that's in the market. And we're going to compare this with 2017. Because in 2017, the S&P index did not register a single down month on a total return basis, which includes the reinvestment dividends. And, of course, this is typically not the case. In 12 of the last 13 calendar years, from 2008 through 2020, which includes the 2008-09 financial crisis, the index endured no less than two negative total return months, and in a couple of cases, as many as eight. As of the first half of 2021, the S&P 500 index has endured just one down month, and that was in January. In 2020, there were five down months, and the minus 12.35% total return posted in March of last year marked the largest monthly decline for any year following 2008. And despite the five down months, the index posted a gain for the year. From 2008 to 2020, the S&P 500 index endured a loss of 50 of 156 months, or about a third of the time. Actually 32.1%. Over that same period of time, the index posted an average annualized rate of return of 9.77%, according to Bloomberg. So even though it was down a third of the time, the average return was almost 9.75%. For comparative purposes, from 1926 through 2020, the S&P index posted losses in 25 of 95 years, approximately 26.3% of the time, according to Ibbotson and Morningstar. But over the same period, the index had a total return of about 10.28%. And stock prices don't rise in a straight line. Investors are going to encounter some turbulence along the way. Remember that the S&P 500 index has never failed to fully recoup any losses sustained from a correction or a bear market over time. So we talk about that. Let's also talk about market fluctuations a little bit. After those same 12 years, some have called it a bull market. Many, especially younger investors, may have been caught off guard by the dip that we had early last year. Although no one could have predicted the outbreak of COVID-19, its effects on the economy and financial markets, some have been truly unprecedented. These market fluctuations share many similarities to those that have come before it, helping you understand the stock market fluctuations, how to keep emotions in check, can help navigate turbulent times with more confidence. Creating a sound retirement plan is also essential to minimizing the long-term impact of a down market and empower you to reach your goals no matter how the market fluctuates. We're going to take a quick break, but we'll be back shortly. Thanks for listening.
Cascade Natural Gas has big news about their new Big Heart Debt Relief Program. They understand you may be facing difficult financial decisions, and the Big Heart Program is here to offer big relief. If you need assistance with your residential bill, call to see if you qualify for a grant that will pay up to $2,500 of your account balance, or you could ask for a payment plan for up to 18 months. And getting the Big Heart Grant doesn't disqualify you from applying for even more grants, like up to $500 from the Washington Energy Assistance Fund that you can apply for at your local community action agency. Click on the link on this station's website or call 1-888-522-1130 to see if you qualify for the Big Heart Grant, to set up a payment plan, or for other assistance. Cascade Natural Gas is committed to helping their customers during these difficult times. The Big Heart Grant can offer big relief, so call today to see if you qualify. Cascade Natural Gas is in the community to serve. Learn more online at cngc.com.
At Rod's Japanese Auto Care and Rod's Master Auto Tech, when they say family-owned and operated, they mean it. Here's Brittany describing the family's business.
Hi, I'm Brittany. I work at Rod's with my dad, plus I manage my two older brothers. Every day, we work together to change the perception of our industry. That means integrity, transparency, and educating our customers while treating them with care and respect.
If your car needs service or repair, visit Rod's Japanese Auto Care or Rod's Master Auto Tech today. Get it right with Rod's on the Guide and off Bennett Drive in Bellingham.
Relive your favorite. favorites every day on Bellingham's newest radio station, 98.9 and AM 930 K-Bay. Kick off your workday with a 9 a.m. music marathon. Over an hour of commercial-free classics. Hit after hit from your favorite artists all day, every day. And the broadcast sponsor of the Bellingham Bells. Listen live online, 98.9kbay.com. Join the fun and be a part of Bellingham's newest radio station, 98.9 and AM 930 K-Bay.
The opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of KGMI or the Cascade Radio Group.
And I'm proud to be an American, where at least I know I'm free. And I won't forget the men who died, who gave that right to me, and I gladly stand up.
Welcome back to Wealth Wake Up Live. Dick Donahue with you today. Camille is taking the day off, and we are Asset Advisors. We are located out in Ferndale, about halfway to Ferndale, actually on the Pacific Highway. Go up just north of Slater Road, follow the Pacific Highway up to where Wilson's Furniture is. Our address is 5060 Pacific Highway, Suite 101, Ferndale, 98248. Our phone number, 360-733-1200. Check out our website. Had a really good market update that on Thursday. That is on our website. If you go in there, you can find it there. Also, while I'm thinking about it, I do have Mariners tickets available for next Tuesday's game. That's a 7:10 first pitch. And also, Wednesday's game is a day game. The Mariners are playing Houston. If you're interested, can attend those games. I've got four tickets and a parking pass. Call the office, 360-733-1200. Leave me a message. I'll get back to you and talk to you about those tickets and transfer them to you if you'd like. They're all done electronically on your smartphone, so you have to have a smartphone. Have to make sure you know that. But if you want four Mariners tickets and a parking pass, Tuesday night's game and Wednesday's day game I have available. So anyway, let's continue. I'm talking about market fluctuations as we took that break and I kind of got up against the timeline. I was talking about, you know, maximizing in the long run, having a sound retirement plan is essential to minimizing the long-term impact of a down market. And help you reach your goals. And, you know, emotions often play an outsized role in financial planning decisions. Overreacting to ups and downs in the market can create a lot of emotional roadblocks in the retirement process. No one likes to feel uneasy, so the gut reaction to a significant market drop may be completely rearrange a portfolio or cash it out. But it's important to recognize those emotions and not be ruled by them. A market fluctuation is just that. It is a fluctuation. And while there can be dips, there can also be upswings, often following broader economic trends. So market dips are normal. They do not always mean a recession is looming. It's important to understand that on the average, a bear market is a loss of 20% or more over a sustained amount of time, typically 2 months or more. And a bull market is a situation where the stock prices rise by 20% or more, again, usually after that 20% drop and before a second 20% decline. Predicting how long a market will last, a bear market will last, is difficult, but you can take some solace in the fact that historically stocks, as I said earlier, have generally gone up over the long term. There's no need to panic when the market hits turbulence, such as it did Monday. And this was a great example of it because by Wednesday afternoon, that entire 700-point drop had been recovered. Market continued up on Thursday, continued up on Friday. So you need to have some patience sometimes and just kind of understand. But a diversified portfolio can help you stay on track to where you need to be to meet your goals. So targeting allocations to long-term objectives that match your long-term, your horizon, and your risk tolerance can help reduce the chance of market-related losses, derailing your strategies. Diversification can also strengthen a portfolio by seeking more consistent returns in volatile markets, managing risk, yielding new opportunities for growth, as well as retirement approaches. Our financial goals change, making those adjustments accordingly. So those are things that we can sit down and help you work through. I want to talk a little bit about China and its economy. You know, basically China, a lot of things happen there, but unreliable statistics, mounting debt, non-performing loans are just a few of the underlying characteristics of China's economy. For years, China has tried to hide or shadow its unsustainable economic practices from its people and from the world. Research suggests that they have been overstating gross domestic product numbers for the past decade. It's important to acknowledge that Beijing does not release huge amounts of data. However, when it comes to statistics, there's a big difference between quality and quantity. So isn't it time to really find out what's going on in China? Well, there's the recently issued the China Transparency Report, which is a 120-page assessment that analyzes China's transparency on eight different issues, ranging from the economy to human rights. The report rates economic transparency from the Chinese government at only 4 out of 10. The overall rating isn't much better at 5 out of 10. Unfortunately, recent external shocks, including COVID-19 pandemic, have led President Xi Jinping and the Chinese government to adopt a more authoritarian approach. The government has interfered by harshly cracking down on protests, collecting private data, and surveilling the country. The economy is no exception. Instead of making structural changes aimed at upwarding forwarding process, Beijing turns to more command and control to keep its businesses afloat. Over the last 30 years, the economic development has been quite impressive. The country's 2001 entry into the World Trade Organization had allowed it to unprecedented opportunities for foreign trade. Global trade revolutionized China's markets, lifting millions out of poverty. But despite this and other seemingly positive returns, China has never let go of its tight grip on the economy. In fact, more than ever, businesses can only operate in China if the Chinese Communist Party approves and only to further its goals. The Annual Index of Economic Freedom measures economic governance in the key areas related to economic growth and prosperity. It highlighted once again that China remains a mostly unfree economy. The economic freedom that does exist in the world's second largest economy is severely lacking in depth and breadth across the country. China's economic freedom has barely grown over the last 27 years. Worse, various policies that Chinese leaders have enacted for more than a decade now are compounding the very problems that they're meant to fix. The Chinese Communist Party has been attached to capitalizing on general greater political control, even at the cost of long-term economic development. Well, we're going to stick a quick question in here, I think, and try to answer something. We're seeing that a lot of movement towards municipal bonds has been taking place, but people aren't aware of this, but it could actually increase your Medicare premiums. Wealthy investors have been rushing to buy munis in an attempt to mitigate the impact of threatened tax hikes. They may be shocked to learn the municipal bonds that are tax-exempt interest is included in the calculation that triggers Social Security taxes and Medicare premium surcharges. In the first 6 months of this year, municipal bonds have attracted about $56.9 billion of net new money. That's the most in first half of any year dating back to 1992. Municipal bonds typically offer interest payments that are exempt from federal income taxes, sometimes from state taxes in the state where the bond is issued. The interest is also exempt from the 3.8% net investment surtax that affects individuals with income over $200,000, couples over $250,000. But out of the box, the Biden administration started talking about taxing the wealthy. The unbelievable distaste for paying taxes has become really widespread. People want to get ahead of the curve. Therefore, they've been buying munis. The demand for bonds has outstripped the supply. The muni market is particularly imbalanced this summer as maturities in June, July, and August are far exceeding those of new issues. The tax rate increases. Tax-free municipal bonds are generally more attractive since the tax equivalent yield for taxpayers is in the higher brackets also increases. The tax equivalent yield is the yield that the investor would have to earn on a taxable bond investment. Many people don't realize that tax-exempt interest is included in what we call the provisional income calculation that determines how much Social Security benefits are taxed, and their modified adjusted gross income formula that determines high income surcharges for Medicare beneficiaries. The problem is exacerbated when investors pay high premiums. A lot of cases, people will pay a high premium, and the report that goes to the IRS and Social Security shows that higher yield, even though a lot of cases, you know, you might only have a 1% bond, but if you have you're paying for a 5% income coupon, you're paying taxes and you're subjecting your Social Security calculation on that 5% coupon. It's something you really need to be aware of. Up to 85% of Social Security benefits can be taxed when provisional income, which includes adjusted gross income, plus exceeds $34,000 for individuals or $44,000 for marrieds. Right now, Medicare beneficiaries Part B pay $148.50. That is if your income is under $88,000 if you're single, $176,000 if you're married. But there are six brackets above that. Some of those put you up with paying as much as $500 a person for your Medicare. When it comes to putting together an investment strategy, we need to make sure that you shouldn't let the tail wag the dog. And so, you know, a couple with higher income is going to pay more Medicare. For example, somebody at $220,000 is going to pay about $297 a month per person. But if their income goes up just $1, then their cost would jump, in this case, from $7,128 a year and add additional $2,138.40 in premium. So some of those things that you need to be aware of when you're sitting out there taking a look at investments and making investment decisions. Dick Donahue with you with Wealth Wake Up. We'll be right back.
For active, independent life? Then check out Meadow Greens Retirement, located in Linden on a 5-star golf course with spectacular views. Meadow Greens Retirement offers private apartments with exceptional amenities, including a complimentary golf membership with a cart and unlimited weekday play. And when it's time to take a break from teeing off, Meadow Greens has so much to offer. You'll love tailored social activities and fine dining, not to mention panoramic views. Relax on the terrace as you soak up the rich green of the golf course and the snow-capped mountains beyond. Meadow Greens is a place where your independence is valued, your needs are taken care of, and your safety is their highest priority. It's retirement living at its finest with a vibrant community focused on the things you love. Call Meadow Greens today to arrange a private tour. Call 360-354-8200 and online at meadowgreenslinden.com. The grass is always greener at Meadow Greens Retirement.
IKO Sumas is hiring for multiple great-paying positions, from entry-level line operators to supervisors. IKO is a global roofing manufacturer producing shingles and roofing accessories. They offer on-the-job training with entry-level positions starting at over $22 an hour, along with excellent benefits and the opportunity to grow your career all across the globe. Join the IKO team today. Apply online at IKO.com. IKO is an equal opportunity employer in a drug-free workplace.
Could you use a new vehicle?
This is Guy from the Chamber of Commerce, and I want to make sure you know of this great incentive program. Details can be found at winatruckwatcom.com. Along with the Chuckanut Health Foundation and the Whatcom County Health Department, we will be rewarding someone who receives their first COVID vaccine between June 1st and July 31st with a new truck or a vehicle of your choice. Simply fill out the registration form at winatruckwatcom.com for your chance to win a new rig.
KGMI Connects is a new live show each week to noon about our community and you.
Oh, my gosh, they're going to take away my health care.
Yeah.
They're going to do this, they're going to do that.
What about that?
You know, the three justices that Trump put on the Supreme Court all voted to uphold Obamacare.
Yeah.
Shocker.
Uh-huh.
Join us each weekday at 4 p.m. for KGMI Connects on KGMI News Talk 790, 96.5 FM, and KGMI.com. The latest local news and important topics of the day from the West Mechanical Studio.
When it comes to your comfort and the air quality in your home, rely on the trained comfort specialists at West Mechanical Heating, Air Conditioning, and Electric with a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Find them at westmechanical.net.
Get the latest news and information 24/7 with KGMI News Talk 790, 96.5 FM in Bellingham and KGMI.com.
CBS News brief. As the Delta variant races through red and other states, the governor of Alabama counts the human cost of vaccine refusal.
Almost 100% of the new hospitalizations
with unvaccinated folks.
The UK has just upgraded its risk assessment of the Delta variant. Dozens of wildfires continue to burn across the American West and the Northern Plains, and more high temperatures are forecast in coming days. Terry Crasco is leading crews battling the Alder Creek, Montana wildfire.
Life and property is always the number one issue that we deal with in any kind of wildfire situation. So we're putting a lot of effort into it.
That fire continues to spread. Social change brings a name change. The Cleveland Indians will now be the Cleveland Guardians.
There has been controversy for a long time as to whether or not they should change the name. The organization made the decision to do that, and now they have made that change and made it official.
CBS's Anthony Piora. CBS News Brief. I'm Vicki Barker.
'Cause there ain't no doubt I love this land. God bless the USA.
Welcome back to Wealth Wake Up Live. Dick Donahue, as I mentioned earlier, Camille is taking the day off. So I'm going to talk a little bit about how understanding economics can really be important. You know, nearly a quarter, 23% of Americans say that socialism means equality. Fewer, 17%, correctly identify socialism as an economic system where the government controls key factors of production and distribution, according to a Gallup poll in 2018. The same poll found that 42% of Americans said that they feel positively about socialism. Despite such apparent support for socialism, many Americans don't have a good grasp on the implications of the system or even what socialism really looks like. There was a recent report from the American Council of Trustees and Alumni that found that only 3% of American colleges require students to take a course in economics. 10 times as many schools require a literature course in their core curriculum. Similarly, a class in economics isn't a high school graduation requirement in half of the states. In terms of practically preparing students to engage and inform citizens in this way, our schools are basically missing the mark. Instead of developing a framework for economic thinking in the classroom, most Americans hear about socialism from politicians such as Bernie Sanders, who said, "To me, socialism doesn't mean that state ownership of everything, but by any means, it means creating a nation and a world in which all human beings have a decent standard of living." But Sanders does not, however, offer a realistic summary of what socialism really would mean for Americans. Basic economic ideas such as supply and demand, scarcity, cooperation, trade-offs, and self-interest are crucial in order to form realistic and sound economic policy. A 2016 paper in the Journal of Economic Education found that students who major in economics graduate more disposed towards free markets and minimal government intervention than when they began in college. In other words, students who have studied economics at least are less likely to be favorable to socialism than they would have been had they not studied economics. Fully 42% of millennials said that they felt favorably towards socialism, according to a recent Rupi poll in 2014, but significantly fewer, 32% of the respondents said that they favor a government-managed economy. Even a grasp of economics would give Americans the tools that they need to ask the hard questions about the socialist policies of politicians on the left, such as Sanders. For example, students will learn that socialism not only requires drastic government control over the economy, it has failed everywhere it has been tried. By examining the components of economic growth, students would learn that capitalism has been the single biggest driver of heightened standards of living throughout human history. Understanding basic economics would fill the gaps in many Americans' understanding of the economy and clarify serious sacrifices that socialism requires. Everyone in society benefits when voters are knowledgeable about the policies that they're voting on. Americans need not be misinformed or misled about economic topics and politics. Colleges and universities in America should make economic classes a priority for students, and certainly far more than the 3% of American colleges should recognize the fact that an understanding of economics is a key component in civic education. I had a question here from a person that called us up, was talking to us about being a client, and basically she was a homemaker until she was age 45. Then she went to nursing school. She's now employed full-time. And she said that I'm taken back that by the 35 years earning rule of Social Security. And she says, I'm contributing 25% of my income towards my company's retirement plan. I'm now 59 years old, and I had hoped to retire at 62. But this rule definitely will definitely make me go until at least age 70. Basically, she wanted to know, how can I continue hoping to retire or partially retire at age 62? Well, you take this question, it's really a challenging one to answer in a non-technical way. The first consideration is how much additional tax that you pay to increase your money benefit. The monthly benefit of Social Security was designed as a progressive system, which means that it costs more in taxes in order to increase high wage earners' benefits with additional earnings than it does for lower wage earners' benefits. So in order to figure out how much it's going to cost you, you have to start with an average, what we call the average index monthly earnings, or AIME. Effectively, all past earnings multiplied by a factor that puts them on a level footing with earnings in the year that you turn 60. If you have less than 35 years of work, then an additional year of work would replace a zero. So basically, you take your 35 years of working. If you didn't work, you have zeros down there that don't apply. So if you want to raise your AIME by a dollar, you've got to pay FICA taxes on $425, which is 35 years times a dollar, 1 month per times 12. The next step is a bit more complicated because Social Security's progressive benefit structure. For every dollar of average index monthly earnings, or AIME, up to about $1,000, basically you're going to get 90 cents of Social Security benefit. So if you average $1,000 a month in earnings over the last 35 years, you would get a monthly benefit of about $900. If you take our example we just gave above, earning $420 would increase your benefit by 90 cents a month, or $10.80 a year. The additional tax cost for Social Security and Medicare only, not including federal or state income tax, would be about $32. So it would take only about 3 years to make up any tax costs for those additional benefit dollars. If you are not eligible for spousal benefits, then that's a great deal. Many who fall into this situation are eligible for spousal benefits or divorced spouse benefits, which means that the additional tax dollars are going to be wasted. If your average monthly earnings are between $1,000 and $6,000 a month, then it's not as beneficial, but still generally beneficial for you to replace those zeros. In these AME ranges, it requires about $420 of earnings to raise your AIME by a dollar. But additional dollar of AIME gets an additional 32 cents per monthly benefit. So in this range, it's going to take you less than 10 years of collecting benefits to make up that additional cost. It's still not a bad deal, but you should consider the possible spousal benefits. In the highest range, which is people over $6,000 a month, each additional dollar of AIME produces 15 cents of additional benefit. This means it takes almost 18 years to recoup the tax cost of the additional benefit dollar for someone who has averaged adjusted earnings over $72,000 a year. This example is for a W-2 employee. Self-employed people pay both employee and employer portions of the FICA taxes. The break-even periods there are roughly double for self-employed. So you got to consider that. The higher your earnings, the more money you're paying in, but the lower benefit that you're getting back. The other consideration is the coordination with other benefits. I mentioned earlier, for example, the existence of a spousal benefit may create a situation where raising your own benefit may have no impact. The other consideration is whether your benefit is higher or lower benefit in a married household. If yours is the lower benefit in the household, it'll continue only until the first death. Then it'll be replaced by the higher benefit. As a result, the time the lower benefit is collected is often considerably shorter than the time that the higher benefit is collected. There are a variety of reasons to work longer. Increasing a Social Security benefit may be one of them, but it is complicated analysis depending on the composition of your household, relative life expectancies, and historical earnings. This decision should really hinge on your overall financial plan and your ability to reach your retirement goals rather than strictly focusing on the Social Security component. So just a few thoughts there about what to be thinking about Social Security. I'm going to spend some time talking about Alzheimer's and senility. And I'm probably going to have to finish this after the break, but we'll start in anyway. You know, at least senility is what it used to be called, but it only happened to the early elderly, like our grandparent, great-grandparents. It wouldn't happen to us. It's not something we need to think about. We got everything planned. We're healthy. We're educated, more so than our great-grandparents were. We're more financially well off, and serenity isn't going to happen to us. We don't need to talk about that or plan for it. Well, if you think that, you better think again, because it is now known as Alzheimer's or related dementia. The statistics are alarming. According to the Alzheimer's Association, more than 1 in 9 people over age 65 have Alzheimer's disease, and our only chance of being diagnosed with Alzheimer's or related dementia doubles every 5 years after the age of 65, beginning at approximately 5.3% at age 65, going up from there. If the disease runs in our family, we have a head injury, we have certain health issues such as hypertension, diabetes, too much stress or overweight, more depression, or a plethora of other conditions, we may have to put even more risk of contracting the disease. I don't need to tell you that losing memory is a scary proposition. The fact that you could live for years if you are otherwise healthy without knowing who you are, where you are, who any of your loved ones are, and not recall your short or most of your long-term past is frightening. Even more disturbing is the fact that you also forget how to care for yourself. Your body begins to forget how to function, requiring more and more care as time goes on. The cost of your financial plan can be astronomical. In the beginning, family may be able to resist. As more professional care is needed, a few $1,000s a month for more home caregivers is not out of the question. As also, if care is needed, the few $1,000s a month could easily become $5,000 to $10,000 to even $12,000 a month, depending on the level of care that is needed where you live. In addition to those pure care risks, those who develop Alzheimer's or related dementia go through a period of time, sometimes prior to their diagnosis, it's possibly early in their diagnosis, when they're considered having diminished capacity. They are not fully yet considered incapable of making their own decisions, and the right has not yet been taken away from them. But the ability to make decisions have been compromised. In this stage, we generally are watching for behavior that has changed in some ways from previous behavior, including missing appointments, getting confused, instructions about having difficulty following instructions, making more frequent calls, for example, to different places asking the same question, trouble handling paperwork, difficulty recalling decisions or actions, changes to mood or personality, poor judgment, memory loss, and difficulty with basic financial concepts. We come back from a break. I'm going to continue to talk about what's happening with dementia and Alzheimer's. Thank you for listening.
'Tis the season to help families in need. Hi, I'm John Barron, owner of Barron Heating and Air Conditioning. I'm excited to let you know our Christmas in July giving event is back. Here at Barron, we know the importance of keeping your family safe and comfortable. This July, we're donating 2 Daikin ductless heat pumps to families living in the communities we serve. And here's why. A ductless heat pump system delivers energy-efficient heating and cooling, providing year-round comfort to a family that may not have heat this winter. And we're not stopping there. For every Daikin comfort system purchased between now and August 31st, we'll put $100 towards a December furnace fund. This fund will be used to give the warmth of a furnace to families in need. So join Barron for Christmas in July. Let's eliminate one more worry and give the gift of year-round comfort to families who need it most. Visit BarronHeating.com for details and to recommend a family today. Barron, your full-service HVAC, electrical, and plumbing contractor. Our mission, improving lives.
My carpets are a mess between the kids, the dog, And my husband.
Oh, sorry, honey.
Thank goodness for Swan's Clean Care and Restoration, the number one choice for carpet and area rug cleaning, upholstery, odor control, and more. So go ahead, kids. I've got Swan's on my side.
Get your home looking and smelling fresh as a spring day. Call Swan's today or visit them online at swanscarpetcleaning.com.
In the shop.
When are they going to eliminate the camshaft and just use either an electronic solenoid, or now they're experimenting with some pneumatically controlled valve?
Steve from Panacea, Kirk from Angler, Brian from Dr. John's, and Dan from Bellingham and Burlington Automotive.
That's a lot of energy taken up just in turning parts in circles.
Exactly.
Join them on In the Shop, 9 to 10 a.m. every Saturday on KGMI News Talk 790, 96.5 FM in Bellingham and KGMI.com.
I'm Ryan Seacrest. First responders are people who stand for a greater purpose. They will be there for you when nobody else is, to help you, your family, your community. This is their selfless promise. This is their sworn duty, to protect, to serve, to help. They put themselves in harm's way for us. They come to the rescue at times when we need them most. First responders are making enormous personal sacrifices to keep showing up for us and fighting the good fight. Nearly 70% of all firefighters are volunteers. That means when they get injured or quarantined, they may not have a way to pay their rent or keep their family safe and fed. No matter who you are or where you live, when you call 911 and ask for help, first responders show up now. Let's show up for the people who show up for us every day and every night.
Go to firstrcf.org and make a difference today.
If tomorrow all the things were gone, I'd work for all my life, and I had to start again with just my children and my wife.
Welcome back to Wealth Wake Up Live. Dick Donahue with you again. If you got questions for us, don't be afraid to give us a call, 360-733-1200. You know, I was talking a little bit about some of the issues that we face with dementia, Alzheimer's, whatever term we want to put on it. And I'll continue with that because some of the bigger concerns during this time can be financial fraud or exploitation. With diminished capacity, we're extremely vulnerable to others who can take advantage of our inability to understand what is not real. About 1 out of 10 seniors over the age of 65 are victims of financial exploitation, according to the Government Accountability Office, with losses totaling about $3 billion a year. Much of this exploitation is at the hands of strangers, but it's also often at the hands of family, friends, and caregivers as well. So now that I've completely frightened you about dementia and diminished capacity, let's take a step back and look at what we can do and should be doing in order to plan and protect ourselves against these risks. From a personal health perspective, the Alzheimer's Association suggests continued physical and mental exercise, continuous learning, social engagement, get good sleep, eat a healthy diet. From a proactive financial planning perspective, put together a proactive aging plan to address the potential risk of dementia, Alzheimer's, diminished capacity, and your overall plan and retirement plan. So what do you want to include? Well, legal documents. It should be up to date. Name the right advocates to act in as your fiduciary should you no longer be able to make decisions yourself. This includes your general financial durable power of attorney, patient advocates, possible successor trustee on a trust, trusted contact for your brokerage contacts, accounts, the executor of your will. These don't need to be the same person, but all need to be trusted people who will stand up for you, act in your best interests, and follow your wishes. You should name backups as your first choices for all of these roles. In addition, you should communicate to these folks that you make sure that they know that they have been named and understand what you expect of them. From a care standpoint, plan for the kind of care that you would like to receive. If you ever need it, you need to provide the type of care that's paid for, paid caregivers, family, etc., where you want to live, how you'd like to receive this care, how you're going to pay for it. You need to communicate your wishes with those that are involved and impacted to make sure that their input is heard. For example, if you think you're going to ask a family member to help take care of you, you better make sure that it works in their plans, that they don't have to give up a job or what have you. From financials, discussing and planning financials to cover both your basic retirement needs are what might come up if you ever need long-term care for dementia is important. Evaluating long-term care insurance is also one of the options, as long as Medicaid. And then the legacy, include legacy planning in your aging plan. What do you want to leave behind? Not just the money, but what values, what family stories, important life lessons, etc. Do you want to make sure your family receives from you? And when you're gone, either after you're or incapacitated or deceased, these are important things to document sooner rather than later so that they're not lost or forgotten. Dementia and diminished capacity are scary. We don't like to think about it when we might not remember our names, remember our loved ones, or even recognize our own reflections in the mirror. But these Ds, again, dementia and diminished capacity, can cause a lot of havoc in our families and to our financial security. If you don't plan ahead, you need to take steps today to put together your aging plan so that you and your loved ones are prepared for the risks that you may face. Preparation is your own best self-defense. Okay. Change of topics here. Let's talk about interesting statistics that we're seeing out there. The government spent $19,762 a person last year. That compares with $780 back in 1920. So 2 years after World War II ended, fiscal year 1920, the government spent approximately $6,358,000, according to a historical table published by the White House Office of Management and Budget. At the same time, the government collected approximately $6,649,000 in taxes, and they had a surplus of about $291 million. When that federal government spending of $6,358,000 is adjusted for inflation to June of this year, the June 21 dollars, the Bureau of Labor Statistics, it comes up to about $82,652,780. Well, 100 years ago, the 1920 census discovered that the United States had a population of 106,000 plus. That means $82,652,000, the federal government in fiscal year 2020, when Woodrow Wilson was president, would equal about $779.58 of today's dollars, or at June of $21. And like I said earlier, they spent $19,762 on you. Back in 1929, the stock market crashed and the Great Depression began. In 1930, when Hubert Hoover was president, the federal government spent a total of just $3,320,000, which equals about $53,000 in 2000 or about $53 billion in June of $21. That means the federal government spent about $435 in June of $21 for each $123,202,000 that were alive that year. In 1932, President Roosevelt was elected president. In his first two terms, federal spending more than doubled, rising from $4,598,000 in 1933 to $9,468,000 in fiscal year 1940. The $9,468 million, that Roosevelt spent in 1940 equaled about $182,440,000 in June of $21, or about $1,380 a person. And Roosevelt was one of the most aggressive advocates of big government. The Great Depression, World War II, his administration took on two of the greatest crises the nation has ever faced. But the rise of per capita federal spending did not end. It only accelerated. In 1950, Harry Truman was spending about $42,592,000,000, which would be about $485 billion of today's dollars. Now, don't forget, our budget today is well over $4 trillion. I can go on through these numbers, but you get the point. In 2000, when Bill Clinton was president, Republicans controlled both houses of Congress. Real capacity spending actually was down from what it had been a decade before. That year, the federal government spent about $1,788,000, or if you took that into June of this year, about $2,798,000 adjusted for inflation. And anyway, back to what I said when I started here. Last year, the government spent $19,762 a person. And if you took that out in inflation-adjusted numbers and looked at 2021 numbers, it would be somewhere around $3,000 a person. So big difference. Anyway, Dick Donahue with you with Wealth Wake Up here on KGMI. Again, if you want Mariners tickets for Tuesday night or Wednesday's day game, give me a call, 360-733-1200. Thanks. Hope you have a great week. Don't forget our show tomorrow morning at 9 o'clock, and take care out there. Thanks for being here.
The opinions voiced on Wealth Wake Up with Dick Donahue and Camille Copenberg are for general information only and not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual. To determine what is appropriate for you, consult a qualified professional. Investment advisory services offered through CWM LLC, a registered investment advisor. Carson Partners is a division of CWM LLC, a nationwide partnership of advisors. Guests on Wealth Wake Up with Dick Donahue and Camille Copenberg are not affiliated with CWM LLC.